Hey guys, and welcome to the world of Asha Pearl. It's my world, and I'm so happy you're here. So, today we're going to continue with Chalice and Book of Life, Chapter 8. And the chapter starts off with a verse from Exodus chapter 23, verse 1, which reads, "Do not spread false rumors, and do not help a guilty person by giving false testimony." And now we continue with chapter 8. I want you to know that it was difficult talking to Anton after, well, planning to marry you, Jabari confesses. "Why was it so difficult? He made the mistake, not you," Zora says. "Yes, but you are making the mistake of not telling him."
"I'll tell him."
"When, Zora? Eventually."
"When is eventually? After the baby's birth? The baby's high school graduation?"
"Jabari, stop it.
You know that he still loves you and he wants to be with you."
Zora begins to feel sentimental, but she gets over it very quickly.
"He can no longer be with me," Zora says. "He's getting married to another woman, and now we are getting married to each other. Besides, according to his family, I'm not worried to be part of his family."
Jabari suggests, "The Lord thinks you and Anton are worthy to be together, and that baby is proof." "Jabari, I know I agreed to it earlier, but this time, I definitely feel marriage is the right decision for us. I hope our mothers feel the same way. I cannot imagine going to another college other than Holy Chalice. It's a great school." "Zora, are you sure that's the only reason you want to stay?"
"Of course."
"So you're over Anton, right?"
"Yeah."
Jabari can sense the uncertainty in her voice. "It's okay," he says. "Besides, the only reason we're getting married is for you to stay in Holy Chalice and graduate. And after graduation, we'll get an annulment and go our separate ways."
"Sure,"
she agrees. "That sounds like a plan to me." Or maybe not. She thinks to herself, "Zora, what is wrong with you? Are you falling for Jabari too?" When Zora and Jabari finally reach the front door, Zora gets her keys and unlocks the door. When she successfully unlocks the door, she calls out to her mother.
"Mommy, are you home?"
Zora calls out to her mother.
"Hey, kids,"
Jingri says. "How was your day?"
"It was good."
"So what's going on? Why are you two standing in front of me like a couple of statues?"
"We need to talk to you about something very important," Jabari says.
"What happened? Did something happen in school?"
Jingri asks with worry.
Jabari starts. "No, school is fine. It's just that, well, considering the circumstances, I would like your daughter's hand in marriage."
"You what?"
"Miss January, your daughter and I have known each other for a long time. It pains me to see her in this predicament. It's not fair that she has to raise our unborn child without a father figure. I want to be that man who takes care of her and her baby."
"That's beautiful, Jabari. However, you and Zora are too young and naive for marriage. It takes work, communication, and compromise. Plus, it seems to me that you want to marry my daughter out of pity."
"No, not at all. I'm in love with Zora. We have a wonderful friendship that has to evolve into a blooming relationship. When Tony broke her heart, I felt for her. I comforted her. I wanted Zara to get on with her life and start anew."
"So you want to marry my daughter while she's on the rebound?"
"No, Miss January, the truth is, I do want to marry your daughter, and I do love her. I love her enough to keep her in Holy Chalice. She deserves a decent college education just like anyone else. It's not fair she has to sacrifice her education for motherhood.
If I marry your daughter, she could have both. Jabari holds Zora's hand. January is moved by Jabari's words, but not completely. I cannot allow this to happen, January concludes. But mommy, Zora interjects, no, Zora. I will not allow you to use marriage as a solution to your problems. Out of curiosity, what does your mother say about this? Well, she objects to it, Jabari answers. I see. Then it settles it. No wedding, no marriage. Sorry, Zora, Jabari says apologetically. I tried. I guess I better go home now. My mother can't handle the triplets on her own for a long time. With heavy hearts, Zora walks Jabari to the front door and bids him goodbye. When she closes the door behind him, she turns and sees the anger in her mother's face. Mama, please don't be mad at Jabari, please, Zora. Pleads Zora. I'm not mad at Jabari. I'm mad at you, January exclaims. I raised you better than that. Mommy, he asked me, and you agreed to it. Zora, I want what's best for you, and I want you to get married for the right reasons. I told you we will get through this. You and I, no one else. I want to get married because I love Jabari. I know that you love Jabari, but you're not in love with Jabari. You're still in love with your ex-boyfriend. I don't understand why. Yes. Yes, I am. But what difference does it make? His family, his fiance's family, and fiance will never allow it, pregnant or not. I have realized that it is over between Tony and me. I'm never getting him back. As for Jabari's concern, he wants to be there for me and the baby. He can be there for you without saying I do. Marry for love, not out of pity. She sadly looks at her mother and goes into her room. She lays on her bed thinking of Anton, Jabari, and school. Zora is overwhelmed. The love of her life leads her to marry another woman, yet she does not know that she is carrying his baby. However, a good friend volunteers to step in to be husband and father, yet the parents yet object to the marriage, even though the intentions are good. What is she going to do? She fears that without a college education, she's a single parent. She is not successful. She is scared. Argentina, Mandela, and Corinthian are sitting in the living room, watching their afternoon cartoons. Times like this are a reprise from the morning over their father. Meanwhile, in the kitchen, Hyacinth, slightly leaning back on her countertop, takes a pull from a cigarette and slowly exhales as if she is releasing the negativity of her soul into the air. With every pull, she backtracks on a series of events that has happened in the past few months with her family. Nevin drinking himself to death, her reckless daughter Sabine, her grandchildren coping with Nevin's death, and now a disturbing phone call from January Grant. Her train of thought breaks from the triplets' laughter from the living room. It brings a tear to Hyacinth's eye. I knew it, Hyacinth thinks to herself. I saw a bad moon rising from the start. And now? Without completing her thoughts to herself, Hyacinth takes a deep breath. She then takes another pull from her cigarette and exhales. Suddenly, she hears the back door unlock. She becomes so startled, she stands straight and pulls and puts her arm down, trying to hide the cigarette, which is still between her fingers. When she sees Jabari walking through the back door, Hyacinth goes back to her casual stand, smoking her cigarette. She does not care about her son's reaction. Mama, You're smoking, Jabari says in shock. Yes. Yes, I am, replies Hyacinth nonchalantly. She flicks the ash from her cigarette into the empty sink. Then Hyacinth takes another pull. Jabari is very concerned for his mother, not only for her health, but for her state of being. He knows when his mother becomes very upset or very stressed over a situation, she smokes. What's wrong? He asks with concern. I am tired, Jabari, Hyacinth answers. I'm very tired. So, go upstairs and get some rest. I'll babysit the triplets. Hyacinth becomes so angry. She blurts out, Who are you? Captain Save-A-Ho? No, Mama, Jabari answers. You said that you were tired and I figured... You figured what? What, Jabari? You can go behind my back and ask this girl's mother for her daughter's hand in marriage after I said no? But Mama, what? Mama, what? I recently buried a good man who I consider one of my children. I am trying to comfort my grandbabies because my other child is too wrapped up in her to do it herself. And now... Hyacinth feels she had to take another pull from her cigarette. She continues, You want to marry a girl who is having someone else's baby. Mama, Jabari starts. You know what? Do whatever you want, Jabari. Get married. I don't care. You want to know why? Why? I am tired. Hyacinth pulls out her cigarette. Puts her cigarette out in the sink and walks out of the kitchen, leaving Jabari completely bewildered. After serving her table, Orchid goes to check on her other drinks. After serving her table, Orchid goes to check on her order of drinks. Hey, Valentine, are those drinks ready? Orchid asks. Right here, Sugar Pie, Valentine replies. Thanks. Where is Isham? I wish I knew. I hope everything is well. Me too. Oh, when you're done, the boss wants to talk to you about something. Okay. Orchid begins to worry. Does he know that she is a teenage runaway, living on the streets? If so, what will she do? How will she survive? After serving her table, she takes a deep breath and walks to Christopher's office. As she walks towards the office door, Orchid's heart beats faster than usual. She begins to tremble with fear. She knocks on the door. Who is it? Christopher asks from behind the door. It's Orchid, she replies. Do you want to see me? Yes, come into my office. She slowly turns the knob and opens the door. Christopher sits casually at his desk, eating Chinese food. He motions her to come closer. Orchid closes the door behind her. When he finally swallows his food, Christopher asks her to sit in one of the chairs. Orchid sits slowly in one of the chairs. Her heart is so full of fear. So how are you? Christopher asks casually. Confused? Scared? Orchid answers. Why do you feel that way? I was in the middle of working and suddenly you want to see me. So why do you wish to see me? Christopher takes a deep breath. I want you to know that I'm here for you, Christopher assures the young woman. Whatever is bothering you, we will solve it together. Okay? Okay, she agrees. Are you in some kind of trouble? Orchid fears begins to heighten. She answers, Trouble? Trouble? I'm in no trouble. Are you sure? Christopher asks with concern. Yes. Christopher is growing tired of being around the bush. "So why were you going into that motel yesterday?" he asked. "What motel?" Orchid asked. "I saw you going into a motel. Are you doing anything illegal?"
"No, no."
"Why would you say something like that? Nothing good happens there. If you're doing something illegal, you are not only putting yourself in danger, but everyone else in Newkirk's in danger."
I'm not doing anything wrong, Orchid.
As crazy as this may sound, you being there is wrong. Not many nice people go into a motel.
Well, now that you mention it, scary things have happened.
When I'm in my room, I hear noises. Scary noises. I hear mostly shouting, like at home. Orchid puts her head down and places hands over her ears. The echoes of screams, yells, and cries haunt and taunt her.
"No," Orchid cries. "Father, I'm sorry. Please stop yelling at me, Father. I will be a good Christian. I will not be disobedient."
Suddenly, Orchid starts to cry. Christopher is a little scared by the sudden behavior, but he can put his fears aside to comfort the young woman. He gently takes her hands from her ears. He says, "Hey, hey, Orchid. Orchid, relax, relax." As Orchid looks into Christopher's eyes, she sees concern and comfort. She suddenly feels a wave of tranquility wash over her. "It's going to be okay. We will get through this," Christopher assures Orchid. Whatever you're going through, I will do my best to help you." Christopher looks around his office to spot a box of tissue and he cannot find it. "Stay here. I'll get something to clean your face," he advises. It does not take long for Christopher to return with some tissue. "Here," Christopher said, handing Orchid some tissue.
"Thank you,"
Orchid replies. The bar owner watches the young waitress clean her face. Orchid is so gentle and dainty as she puts her face dry from her tears. "Okay, Orchid," Christopher starts. You do not seem the type to do anything illegal. So explain to me, what are you doing there?"
"I'm homeless," Orchid confesses.
"You're homeless?
Orchid, why did you leave your home? Were you evicted?"
"Not really.
What happened?"
"I left my parents' home. I have been sheltered by them all my life. They were overprotective and they hurt me. My mother and father hurt me a great deal. I could not take it anymore, so I left."
"If you don't mind me asking, how did your parents hurt you?"
Orchid takes a deep breath. She hesitantly starts.
"My parents are heavily religious, and they use the Bible as a form of educating me to be a Christian and a form of discipline when I stray from the righteous path. They would degrade me, smack me, punch me. One time when I was a little girl, I drew a picture of my mother, my father, and myself. I was so proud. I went to show the picture to my mother."
"Okay," Christopher says. "Then what happened?"
"She looked at the picture for a very long time, as if she was scrutinizing it. Then she became offended."
"This picture looks nothing like us," my mother exclaimed. "You made us look like an abomination to the Lord.
You turn this family unholy and unwholesome. No, mother, I did not. I love you and your and father. I love you and my father very much. I love you and father very much, which is the reason I drew the picture. I explain. You love us. Is this your way of love? The devil must have gotten into you and you let the devil corrupt you. My mother continued to yell. No, mother, please. The Lord is not pleased, and neither am I. Orchid continues. Next thing I know, she grabs me by my arm and made me go into this dark, scary closet to pray until my father returned home from work, which was 2 hours later. When my father returned home, my mother did not only told him about the picture, but she showed him. He was so furious. He grabbed me out of the closet by my arm and threw me on the floor. He picked me up and he shook me so hard I passed out in his grip. When I woke up, I found myself still on the floor. Wow. Christopher replies, I'm so sorry. Did you think perhaps they are looking for you? Orchid looks at Christopher eye to eye. As far as they are concerned, I belong to the world of sin. Orchid continues, they will never allow me in their home now. That's okay, Christopher assures her. You should not be in that kind of environment. Besides, I can already see the damage it's done to you. Damage? Am I damaged? Is there something wrong with me? I didn't mean it that way. I didn't mean it in a bad way. I mean, you need someone to talk to and help you and help you to overcome these horrible memories of the past. It's obvious that you had a traumatic experience with child abuse. And you need appropriate help to resolve these issues. Who do you think can help me? I know. Who? Okay, I need to make a few phone calls. I will let you know the outcome before we lock up New Kirk for the night. In the meantime, you need to go back to work. Okay. Thank you, Chris. Orchid rises from her seat and walks towards the door. She is concerned about Christopher's observation of her past, yet relieved that he is clueless of her real age. Sabine rushes to St. Philomena Children's Hospital in a total panic. She scans for the triplets frantically. She receives a disturbing phone call about her son Mandela and Reed being in the hospital. Sabine is frantic as she makes her way to the front desk. Excuse me, Sabine starts. Yes. Replies the nurse. I'm Mrs. Sabine Nareed. I'm looking for my son. What's the child's name? Mandela Nareed. Oh, yes. He's in the room down the hall. Sabine rushes down the hall until she approaches two police. Now, hold on, miss. The police. Now hold on, miss. One of the police officers commands. Stopping her in her tracks. I cannot allow you to go there because there is a conference in progress. I don't care. My son is in that room. I need to be in there. Sabine exclaims. The caseworker gave me strict directions to not allow you in the room. The hell I will not. All of a sudden, a woman comes out of the hospital room. Her hair is pinned back in a fish braid. She is well-groomed and sharply dressed in a three-piece suit laced with classic pearl jewelry. What's the commotion going on in here? The woman asks as she emerged from her office. As she emerged from the room. Sabine snaps. You tell me, Miss Cooper. Miss Ashlyn Cooper, a social worker from St. Philip. Sabine snaps. You tell me, Miss Cooper. Miss Ashlyn Cooper. I am a social worker for St. Philomena's Child Crusade Services. First and foremost, says the woman. Second, judging from your rant and raving, you must be Mrs. Nereid. You damn right I'm ranting and raving. I want to see my baby. Mrs. Nereid, I need you to calm down. Calm down. You and the Cracker Jack staff won't allow me to take my son home, and you have the nerve to tell me to calm down? Judging from your behavior, you're giving me a valid reason to keep your son away from you. Plus, your son cannot leave this hospital because he has been suffering from chronic headaches and vomiting. Where are my girls? Are you hiding them too? They are in the care of your mother, Hyacinth Montague. Okay, let's discuss this, Miss Cooper. Come with me, Mrs. Nereid. We will discuss the issue in private. Fine. Miss Cooper and Sabine walk down the hall away from Mandela's room. Mrs. Nereid, it is my duty to protect the welfare of every child in the city. Miss Cooper begins. If there is an issue, I must act upon it. Therefore, it has been brought to my attention that the children are being abused and neglected. Okay, who brought this information to your attention? Sabine asks sternly. I cannot say because it's confidential. Miss Cooper, I want to make something clear. Despite my late husband's passing, I take very good care of my children. I always make sure that they are properly dressed and properly fed. Oh, yes, I am well aware of that. I am also well aware of the fact that Mandela, your son, has been complaining about chronic headaches. Headaches? That's impossible. Not according to Mandela. He was very thorough about the issues he's been having, the issues that's been going on in the household. Tell me, how are you handling your late husband's death these days? Fine. I handle it one day at a time. Do you get sad? Maybe upset sometimes? No. Perhaps frustrated? Before she can answer the social worker, Sabine saw her mother Hyacinth walking down the hallway towards them. Hello, I'm Mandela's grandmother, Hyacinth Montague. Hyacinth greets. I was told that he might be here. Sabine is shocked. Mama, what are you doing here? Sabine asks. Who has Argentine and Corinthian? They are in my home with Jabari. Jabari, Miss Cooper asks. Jabari's my son, Hyacinth clarifies. I was just discussing with your daughter the welfare of the triplets, Miss Cooper interrupts. I don't understand, Hyacinth replies. Miss Cooper is implying that I have knowledge that someone is abusing my children, Sabine intercepts. Abuse? Hyacinth asks. I never mentioned the word abuse, Mrs. Nereid, Cooper said. Mrs.
Miss Cooper says, somewhat suspicious. You did not have to mention it. You implied it, exclaims Sabine. Mrs. Nareed, I simply asked you if things were okay, despite your late husband's passing. Why would you accuse that? Asks Hyacinth. Sabine feels that she's being backed into a corner by the social worker and her mother. You know something? I don't know what's going on, but I don't like it. I came to see my baby in a hospital and no one will allow me. Sabine replies, feeling frustrated. I am protecting your son, fires back Miss Cooper. Hold on, exclaims Hyacinth. Miss Cooper, I need to speak to my daughter alone. Sure, agrees Miss Cooper. When the social worker walks away, Hyacinth turns her attention to Sabine. Sabine, Hyacinth says, have you been taking your frustration out on those babies? No, Mama, Sabine says. Really? So tell me this. Why did your brother call me about the belt marks on Tina's back? He's lying. Mama, MJ is a liar. I never hurt those triplets. Maybe. But I see the look on their faces when they're around you. I see the look on their faces when they are with you or around you. They are not happy. Your behavior has gotten worse since Nevin's death. You have a family who is willing to help you. But no, not you. You always think someone has nothing but cruel intentions towards you, especially your children. It is not fair that those children have to suffer because you wallow in your anger and bitterness. You have to let it go. Otherwise, it's going to bite you with a vengeance. Now I'm going to see what's going on with my grandson. Hyacinth walks off to tend to Mandela. She knocks on the door and is invited to come into the hospital room. Miss Cooper stands by Mandela's bedside. She walks towards Mrs. Montague and to discuss the situation further. Mrs. Montague, are you well aware of the situation? The social worker asks. Well, I think so, replies Hyacinth. Well, your grandson and I had a long talk. It has been brought to our attention that only he, but also his sisters, are in a dangerous environment, and their mother happens to be the X factor. X factor? She is the cause of the problem. These children have undergone years of verbal and physical abuse by their mother. Hyacinth is stone-faced and paralyzed by the news. They are scared to be around her, said the caseworker. In fact, when I asked them, do you love your mother? He said, sometimes. I also asked Mandela, when do you love your mother? When you do not love your mother, what do you feel? He said, he feels scared. I would also like to speak to the girls as well. However, in the meantime, I strongly feel that the children should not be with their mother. Hyacinth is in shock. When they are finished talking, they walk back to Mandela's bedside. A tear rolls down Hyacinth's face. Mandela looks at his grandmother. Grandma, why are you crying? Mandela asks. Through her sadness, Hyacinth replies, I'm crying because I'm happy. Happy? People cry when they're sad.
People cry for many reasons. Sad, happy, angry. The tears of your grandmother is shedding are tears of joy because no one will hurt you or your sisters again. Is that true, Grandma? Yes, baby. You and your sisters are going to stay with Grandma. Now, I'm crying like you, Grandma. Great, says Miss Cooper. I will let the mother know your decision. Okay, agrees Hyacinth. When Sabine and the social worker leave the hospital room,
When Hyacinth and the social worker leave the hospital room, Sabine eagerly rushes to her. Miss Cooper, what's going on? Sabine asks. Can I take my son home? No, Mrs. Nareed, Miss Cooper replies. Your son will be going home with Mrs. Montague. Why is... My son is going home with his mother? With his grandmother? It's evident that the child, as well as his sisters, are not safe in your care. This is ridiculous. I've never harmed my children in any way. I take good care of my children. Oh, I bet you do. When they don't make you angry. Let me tell you something. My children want for nothing in this world. Yeah. Except love, tenderness, and understanding. Be that as it may, the children will remain with your mother. You will be entitled a week visit. You will be entitled to week visits to our facility. Each visit will be an hour long. You are also entitled to phone calls to Mrs. Montague's residence whenever you like. However, that will be up to Mrs. Montague. You are making this sound like this is jail. This is not a sentence for you or your triplets. This is our way of protecting children who cannot protect themselves. You don't give a damn. I don't give a damn. My babies are staying with me. You know something, Mrs. Nareed? The more you show your true colors, the more it gives me the reason to keep your children out of your care. Now, we at St. Philomena's Child Crusade Services feel that children should stay with their relatives as opposed to a stranger. If you do not wish to have your triplets with your mother or any other relative, we can have them placed in a foster home. Until when? Until you fulfill your court orders. What are they? I don't know. It's the city court's decision. But by chance the city court feels that your mother's home is unfit, we will send the children to foster homes. Together or separate. It depends on the situation. What the hell is that supposed to mean? Some foster homes are overcrowded. In a case like yours, your children are most likely to be placed in separate foster homes. Sabine feels boxed in a corner. She cannot let that happen to her children. She takes a deep breath and says with surrender, please, if you feel that my children should not be with me for a while, they can stay with their grandmother. I will be damned if my children get placed in a stranger or strangers, most of all separated from each other. Very well, Miss Cooper agrees. The last thing I need from you is to sign papers to get your consent. Although she is very upset, Sabine signs the papers as instructed. They are papers stating the welfare of the children, Argentina Nareed, Mandela Nareed, and Corinthian Nareed. Thank you for your cooperation, Mrs. Reed, says Mrs. Cooper, says Miss Cooper. Just when Miss Cooper is about to walk away from Sabine, Miss Cooper says one last thing. You know, I find this ironic. What's ironic? You have a shred of mercy for those children. Good day, Mrs. Nareed. Okay, that concludes Chapter 8 of Chalice, the Book of Life. Tune into Chapter 9. This is the world of Aja Pearl. It's my world! And I'm so happy you came. Well, I'm so happy you stopped by. Have a good day.